Our next presenter is from the Transportation Security Administration and connected with the San Diego Airport. Now, we had Michael Aguilar, we now have Paul Leonard, and so I don't know what his title is at the TSA the TSA facilities at the airport, but I'm sure he can tell us. And we're looking forward to this because we are fascinated by the rituals that we get put through as we go to fly, as we came down here and so on. So, Mr. Leonard, tell us about transportation security.
Do you want to use this mic, or do you have a mic? Or?
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Paul Leonard. I'm the Assistant Federal Security Director for Screening Operations at San Diego International Airport. It's really a pleasure to be here to speak with you today. And I'll apologize for if anybody's disappointed that General Aguilar is not here to speak with you. I know he has in the past. General Aguilar has taken advantage of his long and very significant history in federal service, both in the Marine Corps and after 10 years with TSA, and decided to retire. Lucky him. So that's a great thing for him. So you're stuck with me, and I'll do my best to make this informative and interesting. And again, thank you very much for inviting us to speak today. So I mentioned I'm the Assistant Federal Security Director for Screening Operations. I'm responsible really for everything that happens at the airport in terms of screening passengers and persons. And I know that's a very significant issue for all of you, both from a security standpoint and staying safe, and also because the airport's a daunting place. I've spent really my entire career in the airport, first with the airlines for 25 years. I was with a great little San Diego-based airline known as TSA or PSA. Woo-hoo! I know. See, I love you guys already. Oh, yes. And so, you know, it was a great little airline, so I was here for a while and then continued on with U.S. Airways when they bought PSA. So we're very much connected to the San Diego area. And as I was saying, the airport's a daunting place. In the airline business, we worked really hard to make the experience as trouble-free as possible, especially went to great lengths for those that have special needs and disabilities. And so I'm really here to both continue that and to help make the part of that experience that's now the security checkpoint perhaps a little more understandable. So I want to talk a little bit about TSA, about our mission, about what we've been doing the past 10 years and where we're going. I think that's significant. And then I'll talk a little bit about the procedures, especially those for passengers with disabilities and the blind and visual impairments. And like I said, hopefully we'll be able to demystify some of that. And since you know who I am now, you know that when you come through San Diego and there are challenges and we're not doing it the way we should, you know who to talk to, and I'm certainly going to be here for you. Okay, so San Diego, at the airport, I've got 650 transportation security officers who are literally at the tip of the spear. They really have a difficult job. I'll talk just a bit about that first. When new TSOs come into the organization, I meet with them at their orientation, and I look straight at them and I say, this is a really, really tough job. And the reason it's difficult is because TSA has two strategic goals. One is for world-class security, and one is for world-class customer service. And so think about it. If you were working for a service organization and you looked at an application, and on the application it said work experience and it said counterterrorism, I bet you'd go, what a great attribute for somebody in customer service. Right, right. So it's one of the things that makes it so difficult. And we have great people that do great work. But the reality is they have to maintain an edge and a focus and attention to detail sufficient to protect you and to be an effective counterterrorism force. And they still have to do it with compassion and sensitivity and attention to your needs and everybody else's needs at the same time. So it is a very challenging job. I'm proud of our team in San Diego, and we're always trying to do better. So let's look at TSA as an agency. TSA, as I think most of you know, was set up a little over 10 years ago in 2002 with the passage of the Aviation Transportation Security Act. It established the agency at the time. We went from zero to about 50,000 employees in 18 months. That is really something that's never been accomplished except perhaps in a wartime military buildup. General Motors didn't do it. GE didn't do it. Nobody's done it. So for the folks that were around in 2002 and put the agency together, it was quite an accomplishment. We're still at about 50,000 inspectors, officers, leaders, folks across the country responsible for their mission, which is to maintain the free movement of persons and commerce throughout the transportation system. We all know what happened after 9/11. In addition to the tragic loss of life, the country really came to a grinding halt. We're here to make sure that never happens again. The other significant part of what we do is that we actually also protect other modes of transportation, maritime, rail, highway, and pipeline. So we have to take care of all of those things. I mentioned I came from the airline industry. One of my favorite axioms when we look at the actual work that we have to do is that you have to match the experience with the expectation. That's kind of where the essence of customer satisfaction is. And so we're trying to do these things at the same time of setting an expectation and making sure that we meet that expectation actually in the experience. So as TSA has evolved over the years, we have a new administrator, John Pisto, who comes from the FBI. And he recognized right away that the real mission at TSA wasn't to screen passengers. The real mission was a counterterrorism mission. And that's what we set out to accomplish. In order to do that, we really had to move away from the one-size-fits-all approach to screening. While that worked very well initially as we made the transition, from pre-9/11 to 9/11, post-9/11 and TSA, the fact is that the threat continues to evolve. There are bad guys out there for which aviation is a very attractive target. And so we've had to change our tactics. And we're really doing that through a risk-based, intelligence-driven approach to counterterrorism. To kind of set the stage for where the organization is going, I think it's important to kind of look back at what security at the airport was like pre-9/11. You have to remember that before 9/11 and before TSA, there was no cohesive system in place to check passengers' names against terrorist watch lists in advance of flying. We only had limited technologies in place to uncover a wide array of threats to passengers or aircraft. There was no comprehensive federal requirements to screen checked bags or carry-on luggage. We had minimal in-flight security on most flights. And perhaps most important from a coordination standpoint, before 9/11, there was a lack of timely intelligence sharing, both from the federal level to the airports and also back up from the airports to the federal level. So since 9/11, since TSA, we've partnered with industry stakeholders, airline partners, to really build a more cohesive structure and what we do. The addition of intelligence gathering and a really effective intelligence gathering has allowed us to really make this transition to a risk-based, intelligence-driven approach to security. In the past 10 years, there's a couple of milestones that are significant. We now match 100% of all passengers flying into, out of, and within the United States against a government watch list through the Secure Flight Program. We screen all air cargo transported on passenger aircraft domestically. We work with our international partners to ensure that high-risk cargo is screened that comes into the United States on cargo and passenger airplanes. And we've improved security throughout the agency with innovative technology that provides advanced baggage screening for explosives. Additionally, since 2005, we've conducted more than 26,000 visible intermotive and preventive and response Viper operations. We have 25 multimodal Viper teams working in transportation sectors across the country. Since 2006, we've completed 190 baseline risk assessments for security enhancements in various modes of transit, which basically means we go out to various modes of transportation, whether it's the coaster, Amtrak, whatever, pipelines all over the country, and do a threat assessment and make the enhancements that are necessary to protect those systems. We're seeing a lot of benefits from these changes, which really is the heart of our multi-layered approach to security. We've also added cutting-edge technology. Just so you know, since 2002, we've screened nearly 6 billion passengers through the United States. It's really a tremendous number, given the fact that most passengers have two or three carry-on items and a couple of check bags. You can multiply that by five if you want to know what we're doing behind the scenes in terms of checked baggage and screening of other items. It is really amazing, frankly, that 10 years after 9/11, throughout the TSA system, we still detect and deter and actually prevent five or six firearms a day from getting on airplanes. It's hard to believe, isn't it? They're still out there. So let's talk about technology. We've introduced a number of state-of-the-art technologies to enhance our capabilities. AIT is one of them, advanced imaging technology. While there's no perfect technology, AIT gives our officers the best opportunities to detect both metallic and non-metallic threats, including those used similar to the Christmas Day bomber, the underwear bomber. You know, in spite of the seriousness of that, how would you like to go through life being known as the underwear bomber? Right. So he's safely in prison as the underwear bomber, where he'll remain forever. The manufacturers of this technology, they continue to enhance this equipment, both in terms of capability and strengthening the privacy features of the equipment. We're also able to modify the software as new threats come available for the detection of those threats. And it allows us to keep up with a continually changing threat environment. The bad guys are continuously evaluating our technology and our techniques in an effort to beat them, so we have to stay ahead of them at all times. Strengthening privacy, I mentioned that. It's a very, very important piece of what we do. And recently last year, about this time last year, we introduced a new feature to our millimeter wave advanced imaging technology that really eliminates the actual image of the person altogether, so the privacy issues associated with that are no longer present in that technology. And instead, what we get is I call it an avatar or a mock-up, or it's a little bit more elegant than a stick figure, but it's basically that, and it identifies the location of the threat that we have to resolve. So as you know, there was a lot of controversy around our AITs when they first rolled out, and we continue to work to try to mitigate that. In addition, it doesn't just come down to technology. We are also trying to improve our procedural standards to be both more efficient, and it's really at the heart of this thing that we're going to talk about now called risk-based security. So one way we're doing that is by putting different practices in place that are based on risk and intelligence, the intelligence that we get, and it allows us to do some things. I mentioned earlier that we're now able to vet and check 100% of all the passengers flying domestically against a watch list. Doing that gets us closer to really being able to assess risk in individual passengers. So we're doing that again. We're moving away from the one-size-fits-all model, and trying to get closer, because the goal really is to apply our resources toward the highest risk threat that we have out there. TSA has already begun to implement risk-based screening across the country. These initiatives enable us to focus resources on those persons who pose the greatest risk, including those on terrorist watch lists, while providing expedited screening to other passengers that we know to be trusted travelers. So in 2011, we implemented a couple of new concepts around this. We introduced a program that allows us to identify pilots and verify their identity and expedite their screening. We've also made adjustments in screening procedures for children under 12 and for those passengers over 75. Specifically, children under 12 don't have to take their shoes off anymore, which is for any of, for those of us that have had small children, putting those shoes on and off is enough to exhaust you for the day, pretty much ruin your trip. But it is important. We also have procedures now that reduce the likelihood that children are going to need additional screening measures. Also for passengers over 75, they no longer have to take off their shoes. They can wear a light outer garment, headwear. They can also keep on. Most significant to these new processes and procedures really is pre-check. It's getting a lot of press. I hope you've heard of it. We're very excited about it. And pre-check is really an initiative that focuses on our ability to do pre-screen for individuals on whom we have a lot of information. So we've partnered with our major airline, the major airlines, and also U.S. Customs and Border Protection on this pre-check initiative. And so what happens is certain frequent travelers from several major airlines are able to apply for this program, provide us with additional information, and actually become members of pre-check program. Also, through CBP's global entry program, we're also able to, if you're not a frequent traveler, you can also join pre-check through that process as well. So if you are a frequent traveler, you should contact your airline, whichever that one may be, and ask for information about participating in pre-check. And certainly, like I said, if you're not, you can go to the website and go to globalentry.gov and apply there and get some more information. Passengers with disabilities can sign up for pre-check as well, receive the same benefits. Those benefits really are actually pretty significant. You don't have to take off your shoes. You don't have to take the 3-1-1 baggie out of your carry-on bag. You don't have to remove your laptop from your bag. You can wear a light outer jacket, and you don't have to take off your belt. So clearly, not having to remove your shoes, belt, items, and those things from your carry-ons, especially for the blind and those with visual impairments, that's a big help going through the checkpoint. So I encourage you to look further into pre-check. We also have a dedicated lane for pre-check, which will generally speed things along. You don't have to wait in line. Pre-check lanes also are less likely to have advanced imaging technology, so that tends to speed things up. And for those of you with service animals, that decomplicates things a little bit as you go through the checkpoint. So really, this is a significant shift in our strategy. It allows us, as I said, to focus more on those passengers that pose the highest risk as we continue to identify populations that pose a lesser risk, and also hopefully put in place some things that help speed you through the checkpoint and get on your way. So I mentioned earlier as well, really a big part of my being here today is to talk a little bit about what happens at the security checkpoint and how those procedures affect you. I'm going to go over those again and help clarify what those are, and then we'll certainly have some time at the end for questions. I spoke earlier, satisfaction is really, customer satisfaction is predicated on having the expectation meet the experience. I know most of you are probably familiar with the screening process, and there are concerns that the procedures aren't always done exactly right every time. With 50,000 officers and even with my 650 in San Diego, we really strive for excellence and consistency. We're going to continue to do that. But I think it's important for us to go over the procedures again and talk a little bit about them hopefully make it a little bit easier. So persons with visual disabilities have to be screened like everybody else. You have to undergo screening. But it's really important, and remember this, anytime you're uncomfortable with the procedures, you can ask for a private screening and get personalized attention through that process. That's always open to you. You ask for it, we're happy to do it. And while the procedures don't change, it generally is a little bit more, you can take your time and get through the things that we need to do. It's out of public view in a private location. Your family or companions can stay with you at all times. If you have a service animal, we're not going to separate you from your service animal. Generally, standard screening process includes x-ray of your accessible property, whatever you have with you, and walk-through metal detector screening. And there may be additional screening depending on what happens in that process, including pat-downs, carry-on inspections, and explosive trace detections. So we have a number of measures that we employ in certain circumstances in order to resolve any concerns that we may have. You may divest your items, such as outer jackets, items from your pockets, and shoes during x-ray screening, unless you're over 75 and you don't need to do that anymore, under 12. Your cane or other assistive device must be x-rayed or physically inspected. So a couple things on that. For x-ray, and canes, and any if you have a braille note taker or something like that, they have to undergo x-ray or hand screening by an officer. You should tell the officer, please tell the officer if they need to be returned to you immediately, and we'll make sure that that happens. If you have a collapsible cane, we'd like you can collapse it and place it in the container for x-ray. Otherwise, non-collapsible canes can be placed directly on the x-ray belt, and we'll get them back to you. In San Diego, we have plastic canes at the checkpoint. They should be available to you to use if you wish. If it's unavailable for whatever reason in San Diego or at any other airport, there should be somebody there to assist you. Either way, there should be somebody there to assist you, and we want to make sure that happens. And we'll remain with you until we're done with the screening process. If you desire physical inspection of your cane instead of x-ray, you can walk through the walk-through metal detector with your cane, and the officer will inspect it for you afterwards. If for some reason there's any anomalies with your cane, then we will ask to run it through the x-ray. Okay? If you have a service animal, they have to undergo walk-through metal detector screening along with you. There's a couple ways to do that. You can let them walk ahead of you, or they can walk behind you. You can go through first, and they can come along after. If you walk through with them together, which is perfectly okay, and either one of you alarm, and the service animals generally will because they've got some metal on them in their harness and stuff, then there may be some additional screening required to resolve whatever that alarm was on both yourself and on the animal. We may ask you to assist us in screening the animal, which may involve some pat-downs and some other things. We're going to visually inspect the service animal and certainly pat down the harness and the other things. You don't need to remove anything. We're not going to ask you to remove the harness or anything else from your service animal. That can certainly stay. And I'm sorry. Thank you so much. Do you want me to start over? Okay. Does that mean hurry up? Okay. No, that's fine. So especially with these procedures, if you didn't hear it, I'm happy to go back. We didn't start that long. Okay. All right. So some of our officers may well not be comfortable around animals. If that's the case, they may ask another officer to come and do the inspection of your animal, of your service animal. So that does happen from time to time. If your animal needs to, if your service animal needs to be relieved for any reason, some airports are actually installing relief areas behind the checkpoint. I don't know that San Diego is intending to do that. But I do know that it's a bit frustrating. If you do have to leave the sterile area to go and relieve your animal, you are entitled to come to the front of the line, okay, so you don't have to stand in line again. And this is a really important point. TSA doesn't actually manage the lines. The airlines manage the lines and everything in front of our ticket document checker. So there may not be a TSA officer out there to assist you. So, you know, you can walk right past the line as you need to. You know, we can direct you and get you there to get up to the ticket document checker where we'll let you through and start the screening process right there so you don't have to stand in line. Okay. Important part of the screening process, if you do have a service animal, is that we always ETD your hands, electronic trace detection of your hands when you come through the checkpoint with a service animal. That just involves a few swipes of your hands with a dry, it's like a little swab, and testing it for explosives. Okay. You know, I know some of this. Sometimes you say, "Well, you know, what does this have to do with me?" And I just want to reemphasize again that, you know, the bad guys have made it very clear that they're willing to use women, seniors, children, passengers with disabilities. Not passengers with disabilities, but bad guys with disabilities, in wheelchairs and other things to beat our system. So we try really hard to be cognizant of the special needs, but there is a very important security element to what we're doing. Okay, and just another note again, different protocols will apply. If you're under 12 or over 75, as we talked about, a little bit easier path through the checkpoint for now. So that's something important as well. So in terms of service, many of you may or may not know now, but we started a program early this year called TSA Cares. TSA Cares is a helpline number that you can call. It's designed specifically to assist travelers with special needs and disabilities. They're there to answer your questions about exactly what procedure you can expect when you get to the airport. And in many cases, if you ask, they will arrange, they will forward the information on your arrival and your travel to our local customer service manager, and we'll make sure that things go well when you get to the airport. So we'd like you to call 72 hours ahead of time. And I can give that number to Eugene. The information is all on our website as well. And our website is it 309 compliant? So you can access that. Okay. So we've talked a little bit about TSA's mission, about how our approach to our mission and protecting the free movement of passengers and commerce throughout the country have evolved over time, where they're going in terms of a risk-based, intelligence-driven strategy. And then certainly, most important to you, the procedures and the process that really should be taking place at the airport when you come out to travel, both in San Diego and throughout the airline industry and the country itself. So with that, I can take some questions. Yes, Gene. Let's see. Gene, I think I saw Gene's hand go up first.
Thank you.
Whoops. Whoa.
Okay. Don't get too close. Leg cramps. Sorry. These seats are really bad on the back. Okay. I assume that pretty much procedures are standardized throughout the country, and maybe some variations depending on the needs locally. But Sacramento Airport, I've gone through recently through the new system and the body check, and I noticed how it was very sensitive where they actually picked up, and I had totally forgotten, in the crease of my pants pocket, half of a Vicodin pill, and they told me, he says, do you have something in your pocket? And I turned out my pockets and showed that, and so I was just wondering, you know, is, and they let me have the pill, keep it, but for situations like right now where these leg cramps have herniated discs, the question is, are they that very detailed sensitivity, and if so, why is it necessary for us to relinquish our wallets? That really frightens me personally, and I know that's a strong word, but when I'm going with a SkyCap, sometimes who's daydreaming, and I'm not saying the TSA agents shouldn't be trusted or anything, but I hate being separated from my wallet with my ID and my credit card and money. To have that and not and keep on asking, can I have my wallet back beside my other belongings? So, and because before when I used to go through the body search, they did take, you know, hold up the wallet in front of me right there and would check it. But now when the scan, I would think that, wouldn't it pick up anything that would be of question? Thank you. Sorry for rambling.
No, it's a, can everybody hear me? Yeah, that's a great question. So a couple things. It's very important to remove everything out of your pockets, even small bits of paper and things like that. They can show up as an anomaly and have to be resolved. I can't really talk too much about the actual sensitivity of the machine, but I think it's great that it picked up your Vicodin pill. So that's a good thing. With regard to your wallet, You are entitled, and you can hold your wallet in your hand when you go through the AIT. Just hold it up over your head, and then we'll search it on the other side. So if you ask the question, can I hold my wallet, you can certainly do that. But we will look at it on the other side. If it's really bulky and we can't quite discern what's in it, we may ask to X-ray it. So, but I understand the sensitivity is separating it from you, but you can hold it as you go through the AIT. Yeah, no, it is. You can certainly do that. And I didn't mention the AIT. You can certainly use the AIT. That just the requirement is that you're able to, you know, put your hands over your head and hold the pose for about 7 seconds. So if you're comfortable with that, absolutely, that's a great option, especially for folks that have hip replacements and other metallic implants, knee replacements, any of that. One of the challenges, though, is that we cannot screen you with your service animal in the AIT. Okay.
Thank you. I guess I'm compelled to comment, tell a quick story. When you mentioned the 100% screening, I'm a frequent traveler. I was coming back from our West Virginia affiliate a couple of years ago with a friend, and he warned me on the way to the airport. He said, I'm always stopped. I think I'm on a watch list. And in fact, he was. Now, understand, he's totally blind. Some of you will know him. His name is Pat Sheehan. He had no idea why he was always stopped. Several months later, I encountered a professor who is familiar with English and Irish history and current events, and she proceeded to tell me that there is a Patrick Sheehan who is a member of the Ulster Defense Force, which were the Protestant bad guys. And apparently this gentleman named Mr. Sheehan spent some time in the constabulary. And I guess I bring it up because Obviously, the system is not yet foolproof, but you would think after several years it might get that way. And so I just thought you might wish to comment on the accuracy of the system that we all count on to expedite our travel.
Yeah, so we continue to refine and improve the quality of the information on the watch list. I think we've made some great strides of late. Every once in a while, there is certainly somebody on the list with a similar exact name that matches somebody that perhaps should be on there. And we do have a redress process. So if somebody finds themselves or suspects, having gone through some additional screening measures, that they may be on the watch list, they can get that information off our website and apply to have that looked at.
Shall tell him. Yes, I shall.
Okay, thank you. And I apologize for the additional screening that he may have gone through. So, yes, ma'am in front.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm sorry. He's taking care of that. Okay, thank you.
Okay. The screening process is getting more and more sophisticated, as we all know. I guess one of the great concerns that you guys have is plastics that are surgically implanted in a human body. I guess, is that still a tremendous threat and a possibility of going through?
Having an explosive device implanted in a human body? Plastic explosives, yeah. Just plastic. So you're not referring to medical implants, but. Okay. So a plastic implant should not alarm the walk-through metal detector, if that's what your question is. It detects metallic objects, so folks that have a metallic implant of some kind, a knee replacement, a hip replacement that's made of metal, will alarm the walk-through metal detector. Plastic would not have that effect.
Hello? Oh, right. That there was an attempt a year or 2 years ago to surgically implant explosive in a body.
Right. Okay. That's what I thought your question was. I apologize for the confusion. It's true. There has been intelligence out there that indicates that they are trying to do that. I can't really comment on the threat environment at the moment, but certainly there was intelligence. It did make the news media in terms of those efforts to do that. I really don't know where that is at this point.
Okay. My question was about the pre-check process. Is there a charge for that, and if so, is it a one-time fee?
You know, I apologize. I don't know if there's a charge to join pre-check. I will get an answer for you, though, and let you know, okay? If there is a charge, I don't believe it's very substantial, and there was a process in place for a while where there were companies that were trying to arrange for expedited service through the security checkpoint, and they had an enrollment, a membership program, and fees that continued. To my knowledge, I don't know. I don't think that there's a fee in either case, but I will find out for you.
Thank you for this informative presentation and for TSA's efforts. I wanted to return to the question raised by Gene and to something that you alluded to in your presentation about the difficulties that blind people face in keeping track of their valuable possessions, because unlike other passengers, of course, who can see where their articles are, we can't. And you said it might be possible in some cases, with regard, for example, to something like a valuable, expensive Braille device, to carry it with you and ask that the agent check it by hand. I've not found, in a couple of efforts over the years, it may have changed recently, of course, it's successful in doing that. They've insisted that it be put in the basket, and at the point where you put it in the basket, you're not even in enough proximity to an agent of TSA to ask for a question for an alteration. So what is the exact procedure for my carrying my expensive Braille device with me and handing it to an officer who will then return it to me after inspecting it such that it is never out of the officer's grasp when it's out of my hands.
Well, we do have to X-ray your carry-on luggage.
I'm not disputing that. I'm not disputing that at all.
They have to be subject to X-ray search. There's really no there's no way for us to keep it, in your hands per se. But we can have somebody with you to walk through the process and communicate with you on where your items are and make sure that.
Could you be specific? What do I ask to whom and at what point?
You can ask for a private screening and ask for an officer to stay with you and your belongings while you're screened.
At what point do I ask that question? Because at the time that you're required to put your objects into the basket, you're nowhere in proximity to an officer.
Right. I think if you ask at the point that your IDs are checked, and generally that's done off to the side, in our airport anyway, we bring passengers with disabilities and those that need assistance generally around the main line, and have their IDs checked, and that would be the place to do that.
Hello. Okay. It is working. Okay. My question has to do with on the a lot of the newscasts we're seeing increasing instances of TSA agents stealing from people's luggage, stealing from people's bags, stealing money, other things like that. You know, we tend to carry. A lot of us tend to carry kind of valuable things like our smartphones and things like that in our bags or whatever. And I guess I'm just wondering how closely are these applicants checked in terms of background checks or whatever? How closely are applicants for TSA screeners being checked? Because it just troubles me that this kind of thing is going on because there's nothing that you can do about it. You do have to surrender these things, and I guess just kind of trust that you're going to get your stuff back the way it should be. I know that personally it kind of troubles me. It makes me feel bad about having to surrender these things and give up control of them.
Yeah, I think that's a valid concern. I can tell you that we take these incidents when they occur very, very seriously. I'm sure you've heard in the press that a number of officers in Newark recently were fired. We address those issues. We take the integrity of the workforce very, very seriously for all the reasons that you mentioned. Our officers do get an extensive criminal history records check as well as a background check, a full federal background check. So they are vetted. Regrettably, when you have 50,000 offers out there, there may be one that there may be a bad apple in the group. It's actually very disturbing to all of us, and certainly to the officers, because it does affect their reputation. It affects the public trust, as you very well articulated here. So we take it very, very seriously. I can tell you that in San Diego. Certainly at the checkpoint, we have comprehensive closed-circuit TV. All of our officers know that it's surveilled continuously. And so in the event that something is missing, and we've had passengers misplace things and say, gee, I know it's gone, it's stolen. And we look and we can immediately identify what happened and what occurred. But I think the more important piece is that our officers... we believe the officers have integrity. They want to do the right thing. They know that they have a public trust. And when things don't go that way, we take very, very swift action and take it very seriously. So I do appreciate the concern.
We have to wrap up here pretty soon. So
can you? Okay, thank you. First off, I want to commend TSA for the good work that you are doing. Thank you for making my life safer when I fly. I have two questions for you. One, you're doing some work with the retina imaging scanning. I'm not quite sure what that's called. How does that work if you have an individual who has fake eyes, glass eyes? Prosthetic.
Okay.
Prosthetic eyes. And then my other question is... I'm traveling out of state. and I want to bring some items that are unique to California. One happens to be a salad dressing, and I want to know if I put it in the underneath bag, are there any limitations as to what I can bring? Thanks.
Okay. Retinal imaging is not, at this point, on the horizon that I'm aware of as a security measure with TSA. There's lots of technology out there that's been talked about, facial recognition and other things like that, but the actual retinal imaging that sometimes appears in various films and is talked about is really not something that, that I've seen or heard of is going to be part of our technology in the near future. To your other question, the salad dressing and the other things, liquids, you know, they're still limited to what appears to be less than 3.4 ounces. So better to put it in your checked bags. You can, you know, you'd be amazed. People ship wine and all sorts of beverages and bottles and liquids and things in their checked bag. So if you're taking sizable liquids, you can put it in your checked bag and, you know, wrap it in bubble pack or something like that, and it should come through just fine.
Not turned on. There we go. Thank you. Hi, this is Doug Martin. I have a question. Sometimes you don't know what is going to be confiscated at the gate. I mean, I understand there's guidelines, but what do I do if I have something that I consider personally very valuable and they tell me you can't take this on the airplane? Do I have any recourse for getting it to my destination or shipping it back home, or is there anything I can do at that point?
Well, if you come through the checkpoint with something that is prohibited, it's on the prohibited item list, and it's still a pretty lengthy list, but it generally boiled down to a weapon, incendiary or explosive device, or something that can be used as a weapon, or in some cases, a replica firearm, for instance, then you're going to have to surrender it. For most of those items, unless it's truly a deadly and dangerous weapon at the time, you have an option of either taking it and leaving the checkpoint, in which case, you know, you can put it back in your car or dispose of it or do something with it, give it to whoever brought you to the airport, or we're going to have to confiscate it and keep it. The best practice, frankly, is to, if you have something that's valuable that you want to get to the other destination, put it in your checked baggage, or in some cases you can ship it. But yeah, it's, you know, we just have a prohibited items list and we can't let that stuff up into the sterile area and onto the aircraft. That's what we do.
Okay.
We have one more? No? Okay.
Sorry, what's happening? Okay. Yeah, so I just might say in connection with that that one time I have a backpack with a whole bunch of pockets in it, and I forgot to look in one of them, and there, my Swiss Army knife was in there. And they allowed Bernice to go out to the front counter and they checked it through for me, so I got it. As soon as I got to the inn, put my Swiss Army knife in a big box and checked it through. So sometimes they can handle that. And I'm really glad to know that there's one more milestone in my life, at least. When I'm 75, I can leave my shoes on. But anyway, we are out of time, and I want to thank Mr. Leonard very much for...
Thank you all very much.
And I'm looking forward to... I'll be flying tomorrow to get home, so we'll be your guests tomorrow. At this point, we're going back to business, sort of, I think. It's time for the Mutt Strutt Report. Is Peter Pardini here?
Yep.
There she is. Okay, are we going to do a door prize, Madam Chair?
Let's do a door prize.
Okay. You might be able to get the TSA guy to draw a door prize. I think I fixed it. It was my assistive listening device that was causing the feedback.
It's a macrame plant hanger from Humboldt. A macrame plant hanger from Humboldt chapter. Vince Calderon, are you here? Okay, is that... What's that?
Vince Pollard, can I make just one quick comment?
Oh, sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Paul Leonard again. If I could just make one more comment that perhaps I didn't state as clearly as I would have liked, and that is we have supervisors at our checkpoints whose job it is to smooth the way and to react to issues as they arise. So please don't hesitate if it's not going the way that you would like or it's getting complicated, ask to a supervisor. And I fully expect them to be responsive and assist you, and they will escalate it as they need to in order to make sure that we get things squared away. Okay? That's what we're there for, so please ask for a supervisor.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that, Paul. The airlines also have what they call, what do they call them? Dispute resolution officers, I think. So between TSA supervisors and airline dispute resolution officers, you ought to be able to appeal any issues to somebody in some authority. Are you ready, Peter?